explaining how the papacy of Benedict XVI has written new chapters in the history of the Catholic Church, veteran journalist, author of a number of books dedicated to the popes, and Vatican observer Marco Politi looks back to an intense eight-year period which has further defined the role of the Roman pontiff in a contemporary world. In a conversation with me here at Vatican Radio, Marco Politi expresses his opinion that Benedict's pontificate has been in perennial tension, moving from the past to the present, from the past to the future. By being the first pope to resign in modern times, he says, he has set the stage for a new scenario.
Pope Benedict has moved in the forefront also the human aspect. And he has underlined that the church is led by Christ, not by a person, and that the popes are servants. So when it is time to have a servant who has much vigor spiritually and physically, then it is good that the former servant gives the way to a successor. This is very human and in a certain sense also theologically very deep, because it puts again at the center of this community Christ and God. And he has said that he has had an intense dialogue with God before taking this decision, and that he knew that the decision of stepping down was a very delicate issue and very heavy to take.
I've heard opinions that say that his decision to step down has also been a step to modernise the role of the papacy in a changing world. Do you think this could be the case?
I think he is completing the reforms of Paul VI, who wanted to refresh the top hierarchy of the Church, because he took the unprecedented decision to say that bishops with 75 years have to retire. This had never happened in the history of the Christianity. And then he took also the decision to say that cardinals with over 80 years can't enter the conclave to choose the successor. So now Pope Benedict is giving the possibility to his successors to step down at a certain age or at a certain moment of their health. And this means also that as a rational personality, because he is very rational, he knows very well that in the modern world, first of all, the changes are very quick. And so you need also at the top of the church somebody who can follow all the changes. But second and most important, in the modern world, where the media are so focused on the Pope and the public opinion controls every step, it is not possible, like in past centuries, that you have an old and ill pontiff who maybe doesn't rule really, and somebody behind the scenes takes the decisions. And so in this sense, he modernizes the church, but in a deep sense, it's not just following a mood. And he wants always that the man who holds the steer of the ship of Peter has really the right hands to hold it. And I would add that this gesture, which was absolutely revolutionary and in the same time humble and noble, also was a way to recognize his personal limits, because he said in Latin, "I recognize my incapacity to administer well the mission I have." This is a very noble gesture, and a lot of people have appreciated it, and also people who were not agreeing with everything what the Pope did, whether believers or non-believers, got a new wave of sympathy for him.
This tension there seems to be between the traditionalist Pope who speaks Latin and communicates such a new, as you say, revolutionary decision. Do you think this tension has actually been part of his pontificate?
He was always beyond the stereotypes. He was always beyond, because he has a very high intellectual and spiritual stature. He showed also, in a certain way, a sort of lack of leadership, because it's not his temperament to rule the machinery of the Curia. But with his intellectual dimension, he often in his pontificate was moving from past to present, from past to future. For instance, when in the last years he underlined so many times that Christians must be an active minority in the modern society, this meant that he recognized that the old time of the Christian societies is finished. And he told something like that also when he was in Britain. And when he decided, coming back from Prague, that it is time to open a dialogue with non-believers who search the truth, and decided to invite them for the first time to the great interreligious meeting in Assisi, this is also very modern, because this means to understand that the modern society is a society of crossroads, where many philosophies, many religions, many ways of thinking meet with Christianity. And Christianity must be able to be in dialogue with this dimension.
Marco, you've just written a book, if I'm not mistaken, on Benedict. It's just been released in Italian. Would you like to just tell us a little bit about it? What's it called,
first of all? It's called Joseph Ratzinger, Crisis of a Papacy. It came out in Italy. Now it is translated in German. Because I was realizing, like all the journalists who work here in Rome, that there had been too many crises in his papacy. Of course, unwanted. But also not wanting this crisis shows a problem. He had crisis with Islam, he has crisis with Jews, he had crisis with the Catholics because of the Lefebvrean groups. There was the crisis with European governments and medicine doctors about condom and HIV. There was also a crisis in handling the sex abuse scandals, where it must be said, Pope Benedict has turned a new page in the history of the Catholic Church, being very tough on this
zero tolerance
crimes.
Line.
Yes, mm-hmm. He has opened a way to this line, and he has said that the victims must be at the center of the attention, that the bishops not always did their duty and didn't even follow the ecclesiastical rules. He has put in vigor new, more rigorous rules, and he has asked all the bishops all over the world to elaborate guidelines in confronting this phenomenon. But on the other hand, there are still many archives in the diocese who are closed. And if an archive is closed, you have hidden victims who didn't get justice. And there is still the open problem that nobody has written a rule to oblige the bishops to bring the criminal priests to the civil courts. In some countries, the civil law asks this. In other countries, like Italy, it doesn't exist. So I think it will be necessary to have one rule for all the church. And the final moment of crisis was, of course, this Vatileaks affair. So many documents, authentic documents, coming out to the public who were showing conflicts within the Curia, corruption situations, the problems of the Vatican Bank. I think that when he spoke about the burden of the papacy and that sometimes it was very heavy to bear this burden, the Pope was also referring to these situations. And as I repeat, many crises came out completely unwanted. I mean, he didn't want to have conflict with Islam, and he has a super great esteem for the Jewish traditions. He has also found a better word for the relationship with the Jews than John Paul II, because John Paul II, coming from the Romantic Polish tradition, said that they were our elder brethren. But for the Jews, they don't like this example, because in the Bible, the elder brethren always fail, and the younger brethren win, like Jacob or Joseph, you know. And Pope Benedict has found a better word when he says, our fathers in faith. So he's very subtle thinker and theologian.
That.
And the Jews like that. But unfortunately, there was the Williamson affair. There was the affair of the Friday prayer of the old Tridentine Mass. All these crises have shown that something doesn't work in the central apparatus of the church government, because a pope must also be helped by his staff, by his assistants. And his stepping down is practically the final movement of a pontificate which has been marked by crises.
Thank you very, very much, Marco. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, you wanted to say what was my impression when he stepped down.
Well, we just came that at for the beginning. Where were you? What did you think when you heard the news? Did you believe it?
I was sitting on my working table. I got a phone call from a radio who wanted me to comment the Pope has stepped down. So I always make a double check. I said, send me the news agency. And then I got the news agency. It was only two lines. And I looked for the signature of the agency. The signature of the agency was of a lady, Giovanna Chiri, who works for the Italian news agency ANSA. And I knew that she was absolutely serious. And so I said, yeah, it's true. I was not surprised because since many years, I was saying that he, for his mentality, could be the first pope to step down. So I was always saying there is 50% possibility that he does it. Let's see in the next years what happens. But he may step down. Why I was thinking this? Because I always took Ratzinger's speech is very serious. Also, when I made interviews with him, he has a way of choosing the words. When he speaks, is mm-hmm. as if he was writing what he thinks. So when he told 2 years ago to his biographer, Peter Zewald, that in certain circumstances of physical, mental, and psychological stress, a pope not only has the right but also the duty to step down, it was for me like an alarm signal, because he was speaking about duty. And for the Germans, the word duty is very strong. And already when Pope John Paul II was very ill, there were only two cardinals who were speaking about the possibility that he could step down. One was Cardinal Ratzinger and one was Cardinal Maradiaga. Mm-hmm. So this idea of the possibility and necessity to step down was in his mind. I felt that he had it in his mind as a rational option. And when it happened, I said, voila, he did it.
I get the feeling, speaking to you, I spoke to you at the beginning of his pontificate, I get the feeling you have grown in these years to appreciate him more and more. Am I wrong?
I have a great esteem for his spiritual and intellectual qualities. And I always liked very much as he was preaching the gospel in some little Roman parishes where he went as Bishop of Rome, because he has a way to explain the gospel in such a clear way that it comes straightward to the heart and the minds of very intellectual people and of very simple people. So this, I always felt really in his words, a living faith. And if I am critical to some aspects of his lack of leadership, I do it because it is a duty of a journalist to observe what happens. I have spent 6 years in the USSR, former USSR, during the time of Gorbachev. And I remember also John Paul II appreciated, esteemed very much Gorbachev as personality. And I remember that our chief editors who were sitting in the West were always saying Gorbachev is fantastic, everything is going well. But I realized at a certain point that Gorbachev was losing contact with the society in the USSR, and there was a growing opposition, and that there were people maybe who wanted to run too much, or who were people of the past who were his opponents. And I began to write that not everything was okay with the perestroika, because a journalist, even if you see a personality and say he's an exceptional, extraordinary personality, if he's a politician or a leader or a religious leader, then you must see what really happens during his mandate. And you must be witness also of things when they don't go well.